Podcast, Rock City.
What's up, everybody? Joe here from Podcast Rock City. And with me, as always, is Mr. Jody Havenot.
Hey, greetings from Jindal, Kiss Army.
And Mr. Andrew Kiss.
It is later than you think.
All right, I don't know that one.
That's from Lights Out. It's an old vintage horror radio show of the 40s and 50s.
Oh, that's awesome.
Totally cool.
So how you guys doing this week?
Doing great.
Good.
Thank you guys for listening to the last show. This is Podcast Rock City. If you have never listened to the show, you know, basically it's just, you know, three dudes hanging out, talking about Kiss, you know, and we have a good time, and it's a lot of fun, and we hope you enjoy it. Let's talk about some Kiss news. This week I saw a few different things. One, I saw an interview with Ace Frehley, which was pretty interesting because what he said was that he has recently discovered some demos that he recorded for Kiss that, you know, I guess never got used, and then also some pre-Kiss demos. Do you guys? I mean, that would be really awesome to get a hold of, don't you think?
I've heard the pre-Kiss ones. I don't really like that stuff too much, but I'd be interested in the stuff that was, you know, around the time of Kiss for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got those hardcore Ace Frehley fans that are gonna go, you know, I got to hear that. I think that I would love to hear the pre-Kiss stuff just so I could hear where his head was, you know, guitar wise, you know.
Shoot. Well, I've heard a little bit, and it wasn't that great, you know?
Oh, really? You weren't a big fan of it. And you're an Ace guy.
Ace lover.
Ace lover. Gotcha. Yeah, I don't know. I think I would definitely listen to it. I haven't heard a whole lot of the pre-Kiss stuff. If you guys haven't seen, there is a video out there called The History of Kiss in 90 Seconds, and I watched it the other day, and it's great. I'm going to put it on podcastrockcity.com. Go over there and check it out. It's pretty accurate, I thought. It's like it's literally 90 seconds, and I guess the people that do this get together and put out a video of 90 seconds, and it's a history of something. So it could be, you know, the history of the New York Giants or whatever. Anyway, it's pretty good. It's called The History of Kiss in 90 Seconds. Make sure you go to podcastrockcity.com and check that out. Also, before we get started on our main topic, I want to remind you guys that if you want to send any emails to us, including an Ask Andrew question, you can send it to podcastrockcity1.
That's the number one.
@gmail.com. All right. So some more news. Here we go. And it also leads us into our main topic for the week. A book came out this week, written by Julian Gill. And if you don't know who Julian is, he is basically the proprietor of Kiss FAQ. And if you guys have never checked out that website, I totally recommend it. It is amazing and great and fun, and it has so much information on it, and it's completely informative. Tons of us use it for looking up info for our shows and stuff like that. And Julian's book is called Gene, Ace, Peter, and Paul, A Detailed Exploration of the 1979 Kiss Solo Albums. And he's joining us on Skype right now. Hey, Julian, how you doing?
Hey, guys. It's good to talk to you all, and thanks for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. So I was reading the back of the book, but basically when I was on Amazon, it says about this item, you know, and it'll tell you what you... You know about whatever you're buying, and in this it says it's the same thing, I guess, that's written on the back of the book, and it says the work represents the culmination of a massive effort made to celebrate the 35th anniversary of the 78 Kiss solo albums in 2013. Okay, so, and it goes on from there. So you basically got together with a whole bunch of people and did a ton of interviews and learned all kinds of new stuff.
That's absolutely what it is. And I wish I could say it was me personally who got together with all these people. But back in 2013, I had a person assisting me on the website who was the co-admin, Tim McFate, who did the majority of these interviews with all of these folk associated with the solo albums.
Okay, well, that's awesome. So I guess if somebody purchases this book, what are you hoping that they're going to get from it?
You know, we hear so much from Gene and Paul and kind of the standard party line about the solo albums. What we're trying to present with this book is the third party, those people who helped create the albums, those people who worked on the albums, those people who publicized them, to see if it marries up with what we've all been led to believe about them from Gene and Paul predominantly, but also the few things that Ace and Peter have also said about theirs.
Okay, cool. Let me ask you this. First of all, I got to ask you a couple of quick questions. Who's your favorite member of KISS?
Paul Stanley.
Paul Stanley. Hell yeah. Another Paul guy. Another Paul guy. Okay, favorite record?
Favorite record. Oh, that's going to be tough. Rock and Roll Over.
Okay. So, and which solo album is your favorite?
That gets really difficult. I'm going to have to go with Paul because it's the most KISS-like. But, you know, Ace is damn good as well. So.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. You know, that's cool. Isn't that the craziest thing, though? It's almost like whenever people talk about these four records, it's almost always a consensus that Gene's is third best, Peter's is fourth, and then number one and number two flip-flop.
Right.
Yeah, pretty much. I think you're either going to have those who want the KISS sound, and what is the KISS sound but Paul's voice and Ace's guitar, really.
Right.
Yeah. Whereas Gene's is so experimental and I guess so varied, it's so eclectic and diverse. And Peter's, you know, when I first heard that album, I really had no reference point for that music. So I can just imagine what kids were thinking in 1978 when they put that on. They're probably like, oh, someone put the wrong music on the album.
That's good. I like that. Joe, do you have anything?
What's that?
You have any questions yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
I do have a couple questions later, though, I think.
Okay. Andrew, you good?
What's your favorite color?
my favorite color of Kool-Aid? I'm going to go with the blue.
Oh. I'm always a red guy, but that could cause problems. Okay, so...
I like the clear Arctic Gatorade. Powerade.
So, oh my God.
Oh, I have a question. It's kind of a general question, but, defining KISS moment for you, like what changed it from like just a casual listener to an obsession, or like was it always just like as soon as you saw them you needed to know everything about them?
You know, very soon after becoming a fan I had to know everything about them. I started keeping lists, you know, tracking down collectibles in the back of magazines and writing down the different versions. So very soon after becoming a fan, I became a lunatic.
I think that's the case for most KISS fans, I guess.
Right. So what's the most surprising thing that you found out, you know?
That was my question.
It wasn't really? Okay, yeah, Jody and Joe's question is, what's the most surprising thing you found out about, you know, the recording of the records?
You know, I don't think there's any one thing that's particularly surprising. There was one thing, and I don't even know if I can still say what it is. I'd have to check, but it was, you know, the inspiration for Hold Me, Touch Me, which we didn't know at the time. And we had to edit it out, actually, and it still is edited out, but that was surprising. But I think, for one, I can tell you, it's Jeff Glicksman and working with Paul Stanley. That was the most surprising thing, and how, you know, Paul gets half the production credit and Jeff gets half, and how there seemed to be that bad blood on that working relationship. And Jeff did a wonderful, absolutely wonderful job explaining how he came into the project, Paul's perception of what he wanted from Jeff, and how the two did not mix very well. So for me, that's the best part of it all.
Wow,
that's really interesting. When it came to Ace's album, and I haven't had the opportunity to get deep into the book yet because I just received it, but I guess my question is going to be, when it comes to Ace's album, do you think, like, to me, when I look at the people that played on that record, I always think that he had the best band. You know,
who, Ace?
Yeah.
It was just him and Anton, right?
Was it Will Lee as well on there? And
Will Lee plays on a couple tracks, and that is basically it. So
yeah,
you know, you got the background vocalist on a few songs, Susan Collins, David Lasley, but it's basically Ace,
right?
Hmm.
So what's your take on Gene having like the whole like cavalcade of stars on his record? I mean, did you talk to a lot of those people? I don't have the book yet.
Yeah, we spoke to, you know, quite a few of the guys who were on the album. Obviously, we can't get Donna Summer or people like that, but Michael Desbarres,
Mitch Weiss, you know,
Mitch is cool. You know, the cavalcade is problematic. That you start trying to judge it. Is it this ego? Is this all about, you know, I can put these people on a thank you list and look at that thank you list on the back of his album,
right?
or is he really just celebrating what he's accomplished? Because you look at some of the things in there and it kind of says, well, you know, I'm just really happy I made it. I'm the American dream. And especially when he does When You Wish Upon a Star as the last track, I mean, that's cornball, but he really believes it. So
right.
You kind of have to separate that he has all these people who are big in the industry and some people who, you know, we may not remember nowadays as being big, and just take it for what it is, that this was a guy who couldn't believe that he was making a solo album, had risen to the heights that he did, and is just trying to thank everyone and just share with everyone. Well, that, maybe that's a bad pun to use, share.
I always felt that the song When You Wish Upon a Star was very sincere.
Totally.
Yeah, I always felt like this was him saying, oh my God, I cannot believe I'm this lucky. I mean,
yeah, I never got it. You know, I was like, what the hell is this doing on here? Give me some electric guitars, Gene. Come on. You know, finish the album like you started with that, you know, spooky intro. So I never got it until we really read more about him, you know, decades later, and kind of understand that Gene really embodies, you know, coming to America with nothing, becoming something, and then becoming something massive. So I don't think he's ever hidden his celebration of what he's accomplished.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know that if they were to have never done those solo albums, but they all of a sudden would do them now, that Gene would put that song on there, because I don't know if he's as it's almost like before he was so surprised, oh my God, my life is turning out wonderfully, you know what I mean? And now it seems like Gene is more of the, of course my life is wonderful type of
thing. But look back to Asshole. He did, you know, I Dream a Thousand Dreams, you know, so he did the same thing again on his next solo album, but maybe it was a little bit more calculating. I better have a song that thanks everyone, you know.
Right. So I have a few more questions. Do you think that Peter's... Now, this is my personal thing. When I got the first solo album, it was Peter. And I have to tell you that I really like the album. And the reason I really like the album for me is I'm not just into rock. I'm also into, you know... I mean, I can't even name all the types of music just because that's how I was raised. My mom wasn't a rock chick. My mom was, you know, a Barry Manilow chick or, you know, a Neil Sedaka. So musically, I'm all over the place. So when I first heard Peter's album, I went, wow, you know, this is really cool. It's so different, you know. And so in my personal opinion, the album's really not bad. It's just not what people expected. Is that basically what you get as well, or do you think the album's just bad?
That is completely what I get. I mean, my musical background when I was getting into Kiss, obviously my mom listened to Anne Murray and Crystal Gayle, you know, and obviously with our Liverpool connection, a lot of Beatles and John Lennon. So this album had none of that for me. It's only years later, after we've heard the demos for the stuff he did with Stan Penridge before Kiss, that we're like, oh, wow, he re-recorded those in 78. So now you get a little bit more context about the songs that he's putting on there. So my opinion has changed. You know, I quite dig the album. Do I play it a lot? No. When I play it, I'm in the mood to listen to that type of music. And Hell, I Can't Stop the Rain blows my mind every time I hear it.
Yeah, I like that song. I like Kiss the Girl Goodbye. I think that's a great song as well. Now, you know, I often wonder, you know, they did each of the solo albums. They put their faces on the covers. And then that was, I want to say that's the first time we saw the colors to go along with the band members. Am I correct in saying that?
No, it isn't. A couple years, or maybe 18 months previous to that, they had done the signature pins, and that was the first time that Dennis Woolock had assigned colors to each of the members.
Ah.
So that's where those come from. And he tells the story in the book. You know, when they were doing the artwork, having Eduardo do the artwork, he originally considered just having them all with the same aura color. You know, it would be like, I'm not sure what the color was, but then it was like, whoa, we've used these colors associated with each member. Let's use these auras with each of the members. And it kind of ties in with 78 and the band's becoming more, I guess, comic book, and it gives them more mystic separateness where all of the styles of the pictures are kind of similar.
Right.
So that's where that comes from. I mean, that's a really cool kind of little bit of detail.
Yeah, it is really cool. I had heard one time that the Beatles did something like that at one point, where each one of them had a color and like a halo type of thing.
Yeah, kind of Sgt. Pepper-ish.
Yeah.
And then
I also heard that it was purple, blue, red, and green. And those were the colors used as well. And I was like, wow, that's pretty...
Well, it's probably a bit of a take on the Sgt. Peppers, and I can't off the top of my head recall the colors of the uniforms each one of the Beatles were wearing on that album cover. But you know, Kiss would never be one that was shy to, you know, kind of borrow something from the Beatles. I mean, if you're going to steal something, steal from the best.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, so did you uncover anything where you heard like? You know, I remember reading that Ace, most of the songs on his record, he wrote and just put aside, even though he knew they would be good for Kiss, he put aside for himself, kind of like hoarding them, you know? Do you ever think, you know, damn, it's too bad that wasn't on, you know, this album, or, you know what I'm saying? It's like, because his album is so good. Every song is like a winner. And you got, you know, at least to me. And I wonder that if he'd have taken any of those songs and given them to the guys and they would have made it on other records, that, you know, he would have gained more, you know, not credibility with the band because he had it after his solo album came out, but more, you know, points, I guess.
I think internally that's the problem with Ace. At the time that he'd kind of hoarded stuff and not felt creative, you know, to contribute to the band through Rock and Roll Over. I mean, he only puts one song on Love Gun and then the one on Alive too. So there's very little output. Any of the A songs, I think, are just better as A songs. I really can't see Kiss leaving them alone and leaving them as honest as they are on Ace of Silo album. You know, everything Ace or Peter brought to the band seems to get changed up a little bit in order to translate it into the Kiss format. And sometimes it just changes things a little bit too much. So, you know, I'm glad none of that stuff turns up on a Kiss album because it's just perfect where it is. I mean, can you imagine Paul singing Rip It Out instead of Ace, or, you know?
Or like Peter playing anything on the album. I don't think so. I don't think Peter could do anything that Anton does.
Yeah, probably not, but, you know, who knows what could have been if they had tried it.
That's true.
You know, so let's do a little background on you, you know, because people are going, you know, all right, so tell me about the author. How did you discover Kiss?
I was watching MTV in the mid-80s. I was living in upstate New York, and in between Twisted Sister and that sort of stuff, Tears Are Falling comes on, and I was like, wow, this is cool. I loved the video, and that was my first real exposure to Kiss. I mean, I'd heard them when I first moved to America, but it really hadn't clicked. But Asylum got me into the band, so I'm a non-originals era fan. As soon as I became a fan, I started collecting, and there were so many albums to choose from. It was like going to a candy store, and that wasn't the same with other bands.
Right. I always love it when I find a band that's been around for four or five records. and I go, oh, I like this. I could go back and get their whole catalog, and that's a lot of fun. What about your first time seeing them?
I didn't see them until 1998. I was always in the wrong country at the wrong time. Oh. And I mean, I just said, you know, I was living in Binghamton, which happened to be the one place Mark St. John played. And I didn't go to that show. I hadn't become a fan then. So 1998 Dodger Stadium. And it was a fantastic show.
Wow. Absolutely. You were at Dodger Stadium.
Cool.
Yeah, that's really awesome. I would have loved being there. Smashing Pumpkins opened too for that, right?
They did, dressed up as the Beatles 64, and they had the Psycho Circus in the infield, which was probably close to where I was because I could barely see the stage. It was really nice to finally see the show when they put it out on video.
Wow, that is pretty amazing. So we're talking to Julian Gill, who's the author of Gene, Ace, Peter, and Paul, a detailed exploration of the 1978 Kiss solo albums. So far, you know... I think that this is a book that, you know, and I know that you said that you weren't like the one that did a lot of the interviews, but it feels like, man, this really needed to come out because it was such a huge part of the Kiss, you know,
legend,
you know, but when you hear certain things, so let's see if we can clear any of them up without giving too much away. Okay. Whose album sold the most?
Oh, Gene.
Really?
Yep.
And see, and I always hear it's Ace.
Right.
You know, because Gene's such the visual face of the band, he wins. What's more surprising is who sold the least.
Oh, is that Paul?
It is.
Wow.
Good guess. Ding, 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 you win a prize. Whoa. You know, everyone would think it was Peter, but by June 79... Paul has the least shipments. He also had the least picture discs sold, or at least shipped. So, you know, across the board, you know, he was in fourth place, which I really found surprising.
Oh, I wonder why that is. I mean, like, I remember the reason why I bought the Peter album first was because I was with my mom. We were in the store, and I've told this story 100 times on this show, but Peter felt like the safe one. Like, if I walked up and I said, Mom, can you get me this record? It was going to be easier to get than if I held Gene's up and he had the blood and, you know what I mean?
Right.
And my mom didn't even argue. She just went, sure, go ahead, put it in the basket, you know? And I wonder if that wound up happening, you know?
You know, it's probably easier to say, Mom, this is the guy who sings Beth.
Yeah.
Versus calling Dr. Love or Christine 16 or, you know, whatever.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm imagining that was a real... But then when people got it home, I bet they were going, oh, my God, what did I buy? You know? I'm really surprised by that. On the back of Gene's album, you know, we were talking about, you know, all the names on there. And I meant to look at it today to refresh it, you know, my memory on some of them, but didn't it say Katie Sagal as well on there?
It does, because she was in a band on Casablanca back then, the band with no name, and she had done a lot of the background vocals on his demos. So,
right,
and that's she's
Peg
there.
Bundy.
She's Peg Bundy, indeed.
Yes, that is pretty amazing, you know. And a lot of Kiss fans know that already, you know. But I remember watching, you know, she was on the Tonight Show and telling Jay Leno how she got this, you know, discovered, and she basically said, "Gene, you know, discovered me," and I was really surprised by that. I mean, I don't know why I was surprised by that, because, you know, he always seems to be dabbling. You know what I mean? It seems like he's always going, oh, I'm going to, you know, try Van Halen. I'm going to, you know. So you guys have any questions yet?
I was curious if you found out anything that we don't already know about. You know how they're always talking about they shipped so many, but more were returned than were actually even pressed? Like, what's that all about?
that just all falls into that they completely, and this is Neil Bogart essentially, overcommitted to the project by shipping 5.3 million copies of the albums.
Right.
They were warned not to do that. I mean, guys like Clive Davis were telling Neil to scale it back. I mean, this was a band that we know wasn't selling more than 2 million copies of Love Gun Alive 2. I mean, Alive 2 was close to 2 million. Love Gun wasn't. So to think that four separate albums were going to be able to sell as much as an individual Kiss album was just drinking the wrong colored Kool-Aid.
Ba-dum-bum.
But, you know, Neil Bogart had absolute balls of brass. I mean, he wasn't afraid. I mean, he would double down, you know, and still be in the red and double down again. So it was utterly fearless. There was probably a little bit of delusion on the band's part. But, you know, they were going to get paid no matter what because of the contract they signed with Casablanca.
Right.
So
basically they just shipped way too many. So there was a bunch of records still laying around the stores that got shipped back.
That got shipped back and, if I'm not wrong, also got sold into discounters.
Like
which
cutouts,
that forms the basis of the later lawsuit against PolyGram for liquidating all the excess stock at, you know, pennies on the dollar. So, you know, it appeared to be a failure, but on one hand, but it was also a major success if you think of how big the merchandising was, how big the promotion was, and how many they actually did sell. You know, so they didn't want to appear like a failure, but with the returns they did, and it kind of poisoned them in the industry.
Wow.
Yeah, totally.
Go ahead, Joe.
I just thought I've always found this period very interesting because it's like they're at their creative zenith, yet they're totally falling apart, you know? And it's just strange how they sent so many records expecting to just be on top of the world, but then, like you said, it kind of poisoned them for the industry.
Yeah, they come crashing back to earth hard. But you're absolutely right. 78 is really fascinating, not just because of the solo albums, but I mean, you've got the second Japanese tour happening. You've got the Phantom movie. You know, it's such a rich year for the band's history. I mean, I find it as interesting as 1973, 74. You know, the first year, because it's Super Kiss. It's everything that represents Super Kiss and the insanity.
Right, but you know, when I think about it, wasn't like the economy doing poorly at this point? Like, wasn't gas real expensive? And you know, to ask somebody to go out and buy four records,
especially with the age of the fans, was just nuts. To think that kids could afford to buy four albums, you know, or would want to, for that matter, when there was so much other emerging music. Van Halen, I mean, you mentioned that earlier,
right?
They come out early in the year. The Ramones, you know. But all the big bands, I mean, Aerosmith's in decline as well at that time with interpersonal problems. Kiss has its interpersonal problems. And the kids who had grown up with the band are shifting away now as their musical tastes kind of diversify. And that really becomes apparent 18 months later, but it's kind of the start of the end. And yeah, the economy wasn't the greatest either.
Now, you know, we always hear that the reason why they each did a solo album was because I guess it was Peter that wanted to do a solo album, right? And basically, so they all went, okay, well, the way I hear it, when, you know, in the interviews when Paul says, oh, you want to do a solo album? How about we all do a solo album? And well, you know, was it that simple or was it like, you know, was it really just a massive, you know, attempt to keep the band together or...
I don't think it was. When we go by what's the kind of traditional linear history of the band, they all say, well, after we did the movie, we all decided we'd have to do solo albums to keep the band together. Then why is it in the contract they signed with Casablanca, you know, January the 1st, 1977? So that contract's negotiated late 76. Are they in that bad shape, you know, when they're recording Rock and Roll Over that they have to be thinking about solo albums? I don't think so. By 78, for sure, there are problems within the band, but the groundwork's already been laid for them to record them. There's a little bit of fairy tale in there, and I think it, and I say it in the book in the back, there's a couple sections on the contracts. And one of the things I really kind of get out of reading those contracts is that there was just too much money. And Allcoin Management and Glickman Marks were money hungry. And they were going to get the advances for four albums instead of one. So it was a real good way just to pull money into the organization, which was really needed being fed.
Right.
Wow. You know, how much of what we hear about, you know, and I, like I said, I don't want to give away too much. If you guys are listening right now and you, and this is really, you know, stirring, you know, your interest, go, you can get the book on Amazon, correct?
That's correct. And I also have a micro website set up for it, kiss78soloalbums.com, which will give you the link to buy the book on Amazon and the digital edition links as well.
Right. You know, and that's, you know, so go get the book, you know, read it for yourself. Like I said, we don't want to give away too much because then it's not any fun to read the book. And of course that's what we're really trying to do here. I think this is going to be, now this isn't your first book, right?
No, I don't know what number we're on now in terms of printings and different titles, but obviously things started out with the Kiss album Focus back in, when was that? 2002.
And so everything is through Kiss FAQ.
That's right.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. Okay, and so if anybody wants to go and check out any of your books, they're all on Amazon still, or they have to go and search?
You know, I think they're all on Amazon still, at least the ones that haven't been updated and revised through various editions. So Amazon is your place.
That is awesome. Now, is the book also an ebook?
Yeah, we've done, or I should say I've done Kindle editions and an iBook version on iTunes.
Wow, pretty awesome. And then you guys can get that immediately. So if you guys are listening, go on your iTunes account and just download it. You know, it's really awesome. Now, are you doing any kind of special thing where, like, if somebody orders the book, they can get it autographed or an autographed copy or anything like that?
No, I'm not really big on doing autographs, to be honest. I'm a little bit shy of that, as I'm just like, I'm a nobody who runs a website and writes the occasional book. That's really kind of hardcore minutia for Kiss fans, so I'm not selling anything direct. I don't want to go to the post office.
I understand. I understand completely. You know,
hey, don't forget you could check out Julia on the Kiss FAQ podcast every week too on YouTube.
Oh yeah, that is correct. So how long have you guys? How long have you guys been doing that now?
We're up to episode 38, so we started in January, and I've survived this long. It wasn't something either that I was interested in doing. Tim actually suggested it several years ago when Three Sides first started out, and I'd completely blown off the idea, but. Wheeze, who is Daniel, came up with the idea this time of doing it, and I figured, why not give it a shot? The worst people can do is hate me.
Right. Well, yeah. It's really fun.
It's fun.
Yeah, and that's what we try and do with ours as well. It's just we try and have four guys sitting around just talking Kiss. I mean, we don't do any notes beforehand. You know, we might put a few facts together just to try not to screw up because you know what happens when you say something wrong.
Yes, you get letters.
You get letters, and while we don't mind being wrong, I think it bothers me to be corrected.
Yeah, but you know what? To be fair, look, you know, if you guys out there are listening, you like our show, you will like this show. It's basically the same thing, you know. It's just guys sitting around shooting the shit. You know, one of the things about you know, being wrong is it's not easy to always be right because there's so much crap out there. Just like I would have never known that Paul's book sold the least. You know, if somebody would have said, you know, how many times have we talked about the solo albums on this show and probably absolutely said, I bet, you know, Ace's was the most and then Paul's and then Gene's and then Peter's. And it turns out we're totally wrong. And the only way to know that is to get your book, right?
Well, or listen to this podcast, so there you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
You get that one answered. I had to fact check myself. I just flipped open the book just to make sure.
You want to make sure you don't get any letters. Somebody's writing you right now going, hey, did you read your own book?
You know what? And I can't remember squat. Out of the interviews, I've read them so many times now, I'm starting to blank them out. Even though there are some really, really good interviews in there. And I'm going to give you one that you can read right now on the Kiss78SoloAlbums.com. You can go over there and read engineer Rob Freeman's interview in full. And he, of course, engineered Ace's sessions at Plaza Sound, which were the final parts recorded for the album, including New York Groove was recut there. And just the amount of technical detail. If you're a tech head and want to know about recording, then you're going to get more of that sort of information out of that interview than I think's ever been published before, and it's just absolutely incredible. I didn't understand half of it.
I'm surprised I don't hear Jody's computer going right now, because he is a tech head when it comes to recording. he absolutely is. Well, hey, man, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. You know, it's really cool to, you know, just sit around and talk with some other KISS fans as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Author Julian Gill, who is the author of Gene, Ace, Peter, and Paul, A Detailed Exploration of the 78 KISS Solo Albums. And you did have help. You know, I want to make sure that, you know, they know that, because I've seen you a few times go, his name isn't on the book, but...
Yeah, and that really is a critical thing. Just because, you know, Tim hadn't had the time to go through this and give it the attention and the detail that he wanted to give it, because I wanted to get it out this year because we've got another book for next year. You know, his name's not on the cover, but if you look inside, it's on the copyright page. And I'd just like to give a shout-out to Nils Bruck-Svensson, Norwegian guy who did the artwork for this book, did an absolutely fantastic job.
It really is beautiful.
Would love to thank him as well.
Absolutely. It is beautiful. When you look at it, you're like, man, this is, you know, it captures to me, you know, the vibe.
You know, even if the picture order doesn't follow the book title, which is deliberate, it doesn't have to, right. You know.
Yeah, it's a beautiful cover. Thank you so much. Tell them again where they can get the book besides Amazon.
You can get it on Amazon.com, and come on over to kiss78soloalbums.com, and we've got links to the digital editions and direct from the printer.
And don't forget to check out KISS FAQ. It changes by the minute. It really does. It's that awesome. And once again, thank you very much, Julian, for coming on with us.
Well, Jody, Andrew, Joe, it's been a blast. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on.
Okay. Bye-bye. So I hope you guys out there enjoyed that interview. It was a lot of fun. What'd you guys think?
Oh, that was cool to have Julian on.
Need to pick up that book now.
Yeah, man. It's it's, you know, one of those things where you can get all that information that KISS fans crave, you know, all that new stuff. And, you know, there's tons of interviews, and the cover is beautiful. I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, God, somebody really put some effort into this.
Yeah, it's got like the solo posters kind of behind them.
Yeah, with
like,
the stars and the flowers. Yeah, it's really cool. Awesome.
Right. Dude, that blew my mind that Paul sold... Oh, sorry, Jody.
Oh, go ahead, brother.
You guys say that Paul sold the least. I still can't wrap my head around.
That's a trip.
Yeah, yeah, man. Imagine so what cool. else is going to be found inside the book. I don't know if you can hear me.
I was going to ask him what he thought of the black box interviews, but I forgot.
Oh, that's okay. We'll get him back on again. Let's see. How about this week's Ask Android question? This week it comes from, drum roll please, Matthew Porter.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, Matt.
Matt
the
Porter
Wookie himself.
Yes, the Wookiee himself. And he actually sent it to me last week, and I was like, I'm going to hold off because it ties into our interview today. And
ooh, a theme,
yes. And Matt's question is, what is Andrew's favorite song off of each of the KISS solo albums?
I'm shot out of a cannon right now.
Right?
All right.
Yes, I'm still jealous you met that dude and I haven't.
I can't believe
it. Man, don't worry. Next year, this time, we'll all be together at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
It's going to be
crazy.
We
will.
It's going to work out. Don't worry. I'm going to make sure that I'm there.
I'm going. You're going.
Well, can we do like a whole Justice League of podcasts? Like, just have like a world record for a round table?
I am sure whoever shows up will be in a room with a microphone in the middle, and we will just be talking over ourselves.
I don't, like, Ken Mills has to get like the whip and just like everyone settled down.
All right, campers.
Yeah.
Podcast.
All right. So, question.
All right, yeah.
The question is your favorite song off of each solo album. Go.
Okay. Paul, definitely. Well, it's one of my favorite songs of all time. Wouldn't You Like to Know Me?
Nice.
Like, love it.
For Ace. It's easy to say Rip It Out, but I mean, like, Snowblind's really fucking good, and I think that's my favorite on there at the moment.
Okay. Peter's the hardest one, I think.
Well, next is Haim.
Peter's the hardest one.
And the biggest motherfucker. 9-inch stab you right in the fucking eye. Boom.
Okay, song off of Gene's album.
Definitely See You Tonight.
Yeah, that's a good song too.
And for Peter's, I guess You Matter to Me. But really, I haven't had like a thing for that entire album. But if I had to pick one, probably You Matter to Me.
Well, that's all right. That's a good song.
Don't You Let Me Down's kind of good. But entire Peter Criss solo album reminds me of Serpico with Al Pacino.
Right.
I just just so that whole thing. So that was a good movie. So.
So the record must be good.
Well, let's not go that far. Okay. But it helps me. It helps me medicate when listening to it.
Jody, what's your favorite song off of Peter's album?
I go with You Matter to Me.
Yeah.
Slade has really built that on
the cover. I like I Can't Stop the Rain is a good song. I like that very much.
I think Hooked on Rock and Roll is probably the best song, though.
Yeah, that's a good one, too. Yeah, see, man, I don't know, man.
The most cheesy, generic guitar tone on that.
Oh, my God. There it went. There was the Nazi guitar player that just
came. Video game type, like, soundtrack or something. I don't know, something absolutely generic. Yeah.
Okay, so that was our Ask Andrew. Thank you very much for sending that question in, Mr. Porter. Listen, a few things before we go. On podcastrockcity.com, well, okay, let me go backwards for a second. I was listening to the Kistery Science Theater show with Chris Jericho. Yeah.
How fucking cool is that?
Yeah, man, it's really good. I haven't finished it yet because I'm doing it while I'm driving. But Jericho said something on there. He goes, every once in a while, I like to go all the way back to NVIDIA and watch all their real videos, like all the ones that were actually made for songs. And I thought, man, I should put that on the website. So if you go to podcastrockcity.com, you can just scroll through every video, or I'm almost done. I'm up to Crazy Nights now, so I'm loading them in. You know, you can just scroll through every video, the real ones, not the ones that like some dude in, you know, his mom's basement put together with the song and then tried to match up the mouth to the words, you know.
Right. Which are some of those that are pretty cool.
Those are still pretty cool, but still, I'm only doing the official ones.
Okay, you gotta check. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Gonna say you gotta check out Talk Is Jericho.
Oh yeah,
podcast. Like we talked about one of his interviews, but dude, he interviews like Kerry King, Randy Bly, Bruce Dickinson. Like, just I'm hooked on that podcast now. I've been listening to a lot of that. And so
yeah, he definitely has the inside. He's like, you know, he just calls. Hey, it's Chris Jericho, and they go, oh hey Chris, you know. He's lucky in that
way. It's pretty rad that KST got to do it with him.
They got to sit with him, and you know, yeah, that's pretty awesome. Yeah, so go ahead and do that. And while you're there, check out our t-shirts. You can pick up a t-shirt, buy one, take a picture with it, send it to us. That would be awesome. And there's also a little donation button there off to the right. Click on that, donate a dollar or two. We would appreciate it. It's kind of expensive to do this, and the show will always be free, and you don't have to donate anything. But if you feel like it, that's pretty awesome. We appreciate that. Let's see. Mr. Havnot, do you have anything to add?
I would just say I keep on listening. Thanks for listening this time. You know me.
Yeah, absolutely. Mr. Kiss?
Thank you, everyone. That sounded cynical. Sorry.
No, it didn't. It did not. They know you love them. We all love you.
Big hug to everyone.
Once again, thank you guys for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show. And we love a lot of podcasts. You hear us talk about them every week. And we run their commercials at the end of every show. And you are going to hear them in 3, 2, 1. Peace. Peace.
Greetings from Jandel Kiss Army. Strange Ways Podcast is having a rock and roll party, and you are invited. Tune in and hang out with your Kiss Army bros where they celebrate and discuss the gods of thunder. You can find the Earth versions on Podomatic, iTunes, Facebook, and Stitcher. Just Google us.
Yes.
Thanks for listening, and remember to eat it like a piece of cake.
You wanted the best, you got the best. And if you want the hottest show on Monco Radio, join us in the Kiss Room. The Kiss Room is a monthly radio broadcast celebrating the hottest band in the world. Kiss! It's your place for all things Kiss and some... For broadcast dates and all information, go to thekissroom.com. The Kiss Room broadcasts live and worldwide on Monco Radio, where music and minds meet.
All right, Kiss Army. Since 2007... you've been getting Podkissed, the Kiss audio fanzine for your ears.
That's right, it's your Podkissed. Every month, the Podkissed crew, along with the Kiss Room, brings you Kiss talk like no one else, whether it be roundtables, interviews with the band past and present, analysis, and great Kiss fun.
Hi, this is Ace Frehley, and you're listening to Podkissed.
Hi, this is Bruce Kulick, and you're listening to Podkissed.
The Podkissed. The Kiss audio fanzine for your ears.
Kistery Science Theater, the most civilized.
Yeah. Oh, f- oh, f- Lee, come on.
Respectful.
Just imagine G with like a washed-up bass. Boom, 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 boom.
And serious.
No, wait.
Excuse me, Bob. You're going to come over and do my album.
Kiss Podcast on the web. Kistery Science Theater. We bust balls because we can.
Hey, everybody. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Chris.
And we're from the Decibel Geek Podcast. And if you love this...
then you'll love us.
That's right. Brand new episode every single Monday. You can find us on iTunes and at decibelgeek.com. And the best thing is, it's rock and roll, and it's always free.
Hey, this is Nick, co-host of the Pod of Thunder, the only Kiss podcast that breaks down the entire Kiss song catalog one track at a time. Every week, we have a new song chosen at random, and we do our best to analyze it. We talk about Kiss-related topics and non-Kiss-related topics, all the while trying not to kill each other. If you like the sound of that, check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and especially on iTunes. Pod of Thunder!
Ladies and gentlemen, do you like metal, punk rock, hardcore, and cracking jokes about being a fan? Yes? Then check out Music the Lifeblood, the podcast that goes deep into the core of being a fan with new music from badass bands, band and genre discussions, along with in-depth interviews from some of punk, metal, and hardcore's titans. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic, Tumblr, and Facebook. Something old, something new, what are you listening to?
Music, the lifeblood. Baby, you know it's only you and me. And as far as I'm concerned, that's all I need. A generation behind.